a roundup of the main business news from China and elsewhere. This is Global Business.
From CGTN headquarters here in Beijing, this is Global Business. I'm Michael Wong. The headlines we're tracking for you at this hour. China's fiscal revenue and spending both sustained its recovery momentum on a comparable basis during the first quarter of the year. China and Portuguese-speaking countries outlined the road ahead to boost cooperation in trade, investment, and economic development. And the Hannover Messe, one of the world's largest industrial fairs, opened this year with a record number of Chinese exhibitors. I want to start with China's fiscal policy, where Chinese finance officials say fiscal revenue grew about 2.2% in the first quarter of this year. Now, this excludes the influence of special factors, such as a high base and tax cut policies of 2023. Now, during the finance ministry's Monday press briefing, officials also said that tax revenue dropped 4.9% to 4.9 trillion yuan in the first 3 months, but that revenue from cultural, tourism, and advanced manufacturing industries grew fast. Looking forward, the finance ministry says it will offer full support to technology-led industrial innovation and shore up manufacturing development with tax and fee cut policies. Take a listen.
We will continue to implement effective fiscal policies, strengthen fiscal supervision, contribute to macroeconomic control, expanding domestic demand, and fostering new drives of high-quality development in a bid to consolidate the momentum of economic recovery.
On the labor market, China says it created more than 3 million new urban jobs in the first quarter of the year. That is on track to achieving the full-year jobs creation target set in this year's government work report. An official from the Human Resources Ministry said on Tuesday that the national urban surveyed unemployment rate stood at 5.2% in March. That is down 0.1 percentage points compared to the same period last year, reflecting overall stability in the employment market. And China's State Council has stressed the need to improve the function of China's capital markets in the country's modernization drive. Work to be done includes building a safe, regulated, transparent, open and resilient capital market. Chinese Premier Li Qiang highlighted the need to speed up building a sound regulatory system, perfecting key rules for listing, trading and delisting to improve the quality of listed companies as well. Premier Li also stressed the need to intensify punishments for illegal and irregular behavior to safeguard the interests of mid and small investors. While China's financial market continues to be a preferred destination of global money managers, recently German financial giant Allianz Global Investors obtained approval to operate as a wholly foreign-owned public fund management company here on the Chinese mainland. China has been steadily promoting high-level opening up in the financial sector, with more than 50 measures introduced, including allowing international investors to invest in the country's capital markets via more channels, in lifting ownership caps for foreign institutions for securities, futures, and funds. To date, there are 9 wholly foreign-owned mutual funds here in China. Figures from the Asset Management Association of China show that as of February this year, there are 146 registered asset managers in the country. 49 of them are foreign-funded. For more on the market potential for foreign financial institutions here in China, I want to bring in Mr. Liu Zhijin, who is a senior fellow at Renmin University's Chaoyang Institute for Financial Studies. Mr. Liu, thank you for joining us on the program. Look, Tobias Prost, he is the CEO of Allianz Global Investors. He stated that China remains a long-term strategic priority for the company. How do you see the growth in demand for diversified investment products in the Chinese market and what it means for foreign financial institutions?
I have to say that this company is very famous in the world. As we know, this Allianz is a global company and based in everywhere in all business. Its major priority of business is insurance and also AMC. AMC is the asset management company. So it has a really very good result and a record in the history. Actually, Allianz has a very good relations in China for many years. That in the circle, business circle, it's very famous, also well reputed. So in this way that the Alliance joined China's capital market as a whole foreign-funded company is a milestone for China's capital modernization, because China at this time that they invite like Alliance the world level, the AMC to join the capital market, really shows that the world global confidence in China's future and also present capital market also can encourage the more investors from other countries to be invested in China's capital market, can also stabilize and upgrade China's the capital market. In this way, it has provided more diversified opportunities for foreign investors. For instance, we can see not only for insurance, not only for AMC, but also help the Chinese capital market for listing companies and or management, and also how to get rid of the possible and hidden risks among the capital expansion. So in this way, we can see the significant importance of Alliance that joined the China's the capital market. Many people of my friends said, welcome, Mr. Alliance.
Right. We are seeing China's retail investor base expanding as well, Mr. Liu. Of course, that investor base is also growing richer. So let's talk about what it takes to be successful in China's financial markets for an overseas financial institution. So given the growth, given these significant reforms, so just around 2 weeks ago, of course, we saw those new nine measures to further develop in a high-quality manner China's financial markets and capital markets. We're also seeing the continued opening up of China's financial services sector as well. So given all of these structural tailwinds, how can foreign financial institutions really better leverage these opportunities to not only enter the Chinese market, but also thrive here as well?
That's good. Entering the market is a very simple step, but how to thrive or how to be stronger or how to be merged together with the local companies, the local economy, is quite challengeable. So not only for the normal companies, but like Alliance, it has also great competitive and also another challenges in China. Even Alliance has already very rich and enough experiences in Chinese market. But actually, you know, China is the largest developing country. So we have different economic structure, and also we have our different growth structure, different with the other countries. So how to make the differences as less than as possible? This is a big challenge for the Alliance. And another further that point is that Alliance has to pay great attention for the risks that could cause in the Chinese capital market. Chinese capital market as a general is very safe, is very stabilized. But actually there are many investors that they have the different ways of doing business, make this market confusable and controversial. So in this way, how Alliance set up a good example to cooperate with Chinese regulators and also Chinese investors to make this capital market more stable, more transparent. This is very, very important. The other point, in my opinion, I think Alliance has to pay greater attention to train, to upgrade the Chinese talented people, to make the Chinese partner more professional and more loyal to the business in order to deal with all the challenges for international capital market. Because Chinese capital market is very important part of the global capital market. How to make this combination together? I think this is also another priority for Alliance management.
Okay, we're going to leave it there on that topic. Mr. Liu, many thanks for your thoughts on that. Stay with us. We're going to come back to you in just a second.
The world economy as we know it is about to change. Global business reports highlight emerging markets, developing countries, and dynamic sectors worldwide. We feature top analysts and newsmakers to provide perspectives on every facet of business. From an on-the-ground perspective, we provide you with balanced and objective assessments. Fast, sharp, and insightful. Global Business, only on CGTN.
The sixth ministerial conference of the Forum for Economic and Trade Cooperation between China and Portuguese-speaking countries, also known as Forum Macau, was held in the Macau Special Administrative Region on Monday. Delegates from 9 separate Lusophone nations gathered together with officials from China to promote trade and economic development among the participating states. Patrick Falk has more.
Following an 8-year hiatus caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, the Forum Macau returned, welcoming Equatorial Guinea as its 10th member. This is a platform that is expanding, and participating nations are eager for further growth and economic cooperation with one another.
I think that the motivation will also be, I would say, even strengthened after that long period of not meeting in person and in real life terms, because I think the potential for cooperation between China and the Portuguese-speaking countries is so huge.
In recognition of the profile of the event, China was represented by Li Hongzhong, the first-ranked vice chairman of the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress. Portuguese-speaking countries have a combined population of 290 million people. Together with China, the 10 states account for one-fifth of the world's population. Speaking of the welcome dinner, Commerce Minister Wang Wentao said that China is looking forward to working together with Portuguese-speaking countries to promote partnerships and to respond to challenges, and that China hopes to take cooperation to a new level. In the last 10 years, the Cooperation and Development Fund between China and Portuguese-speaking nations has financed 10 projects worth close to $500 million, according to the Secretary General of Forum Macau, Ji Xianzheng. Some of these projects are located in Brazil, Mozambique, Portugal and Angola. But there's plenty more room for growth and to explore different areas of cooperation.
Now this is a new opportunity to broach new areas of cooperation that are interesting and in priorities to countries in renewable energies, digital economies, blue economies, and also other challenges such as climate change and food security as well.
This year, there's added focus on developing partnerships between small and medium-sized enterprises from member countries. In the past, the opportunities born out of the forum had been limited to large-scale investment projects involving high-level government negotiations. Now, the ministerial meetings taking place here will be followed by an entrepreneurs' conference.
By having them, these enterprises involved, not only are we helping the development of these countries, we are also helping the flow of trade, of creativity, of technology, and so many other particularly aspects that these small and medium enterprises that represents in many countries more than 90% of the industrial fabric or economic fabric, that they will be part of the forum. So adding density to the significance of forum that will go much beyond states, much beyond intergovernmental cooperation.
And crucially, help build bridges to bring China closer to the Portuguese-speaking world. Patrick Falk, CGTN, Macau.
Well, economic and trade ties between China and Portuguese-speaking nations have seen robust growth in recent years. Official data shows that the total trade volume between China and these 9 countries reached some $220 billion last year. That is up 2.81% on an annual basis. Brazil, not surprisingly, taking the lead among these nations, with Angola and Portugal following closely behind. Major trade in goods include mechanical and electrical products, communication equipment, textiles, and clothing. For more on China's cooperation with Portuguese-speaking countries, I want to bring back Liu Zhijin, senior fellow at Renmin University's Chongyang Institute for Financial Studies. Mr. Liu, so we were just reporting China's trade with the 9 Lusophone-speaking countries at the Forum Macau. That came in at around $220 billion last year. So when we take a look at the road ahead, what is the potential, you think, when it comes to further boosting cooperation on trade, on investment, on economic and social development between China and the Portuguese-speaking world?
Actually, the Portuguese-speaking countries has been long time that a good partner for China's market. You know, I had the honor to join the forum 6 years ago in Macau, and met many delegations and also friends in the Portuguese friends and countries. So we set up good cooperation and also confidence between each other. Actually, because we both sides have no concrete conflicts or even contradictions, even in the history of today. So we have mutual understandings and mutual confidence in each other. This is the basis why we both sides have so well developed our cooperation and economic ties during the international challenges and uncertainties. Of course, we have to expand our cooperation in different fields to meet the latest demands, for instance, the challenges, for instance, the climate change, because for many countries in Portuguese-speaking countries or areas, they have some big challenges in dealing with the climate change. For instance, the clean vehicle and also the carbon emission reduction, the green development is still a good question for these countries. They need a lot of technical assistance and also the equipment to fulfill their target. And secondly, also in the infrastructure area, also as we know that they need a lot of assistance and help from partners like China. So including the AI and also medical care and also even for livelihood products, we should say that both sides have good chance and opportunity to cooperate with each other. So in this way that the Portuguese-speaking countries are good potential market for China. And also China is also very important partner for these countries, that they can export many products, especially agriculture, and also from this, as I know, from the coffee or your local tea and the fruits came to China. During this expo in Shanghai, we saw many countries from these areas that came to China to export their products. So I think the ties between the two sides will be intensified in the time to come. So this is a very good tendency and trend for both sides.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just about economic investment and trade cooperation. One of the outcomes from the Forum Macau is about China agreeing, for example, to train many of the advisors from these Lusophone countries when it comes to raising their respective countries' healthcare capabilities, when it comes to agriculture as well, like you mentioned. Mr. Liu, how do you see the very special role of China's Macau Special Administrative Region when it comes to Macau acting as a bridge, as a conduit, this platform, I guess, to support stronger economic and development cooperation between China and Portuguese-speaking countries?
I should say Macau really plays a very important and a crucial role that to building up cooperations and a mutual confidence between China and Portuguese-speaking countries, because as we know, Macau has many years that such a history, good connections with these countries. They build up so close economic and the culture, even the traditional ties with like the Brazil and other countries. So in this people-to-people exchange, they are really very well performed in through the Macau's performance. As we know, Macau really is a good winter and also platform, is a window and also platform for China's culture towards the countries in the Portuguese speaking countries. So I think Macau can do a lot more that to strengthen, to deepen the cooperation between the two sides. For instance, to have more education exchange. As we know that education exchange between the two sides is still very booming, but it's not at a very high demanded. So this way that we should boost this education level. And secondly, in the medical care, as we know that the medical care is quite a strong demand in these areas, in these countries. So I think China has also tried to do its best to fulfill its complement, although or commitment to support this country. And the third, of course, the local facilities for infrastructures, hospitals and the schools and universities, and even sport fields as well. So should be also one of the focus in the future for both sides to make a better and a deepen cooperations. And actually we are very having good opportunity, especially both sides will know each other for many years. So that's the good basis for us to deepen our cooperation in different fields.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Liu, many thanks for your thoughts as always. Liu Zhiqin, Senior Fellow at the Chongyang Institute for Financial Studies at the Renmin University of China. Thank you, Mr. Liu. Well, recently there have been concerns from certain countries about what they claim as China's industrial overcapacity. Our reporter Ho Jing spoke to a number of experts in the new energy sector on whether or not China actually is indeed seeing excess capacity in certain sectors when it comes to clean technology. Let's take a listen.
Overcapacity, as implied by the term itself, refers to an excessive capacity for production or services in relation to demand. This economic phenomenon is not uncommon, as the balance between supply and demand fluctuates over time, leading to periods of what is often termed as overcapacity. In the context of China, where the Made in China label is ubiquitous across various sectors, including clothing, shoes, and even high-end manufacturing like Apple products, the country has long been recognized as a powerhouse in manufacturing. However, some Western media outlets continue to raise concerns about China's alleged overcapacity in the new energy sector, including NEVs, solar panels, and lithium batteries. To gain a deeper understanding of the situation, I consulted several experts in the new energy sector.
The new three are completely different from other industries. Firstly, the market growth of the new three is rapidly expanding. The domestic market growth is around 150%, and the global growth is close to 70%. I think the term overcapacity is a false proposition, because from both economic and industry development perspectives, it is necessary to maintain a state of overcapacity. Only through overcapacity can industrial competition be triggered, technological progress be promoted, monopolies eliminated, and prices lowered. In the photovoltaic industry, it takes 3 to 5 years for a large technological iteration and 1 to 2 years for a small technological iteration, and the former production capacity will be eliminated. When calculating current production capacity, we actually include all production capacity.
According to goals set by the International Renewable Energy Agency, 2023 set a new benchmark in renewable power deployment, which needs to be tripled. Therefore, the supply of new energy products is actually far from enough.
COP28 has made an important commitment to triple the number of renewable energy sources by 2030, which means that the world's new photovoltaic installations need to exceed 550 gigawatts per year, while the global new installations in 2023 are 390 gigawatts.
Currently, the EV market is still predicted to more than double over the next 4 years, from below $400 billion yearly sales now to almost $1 trillion.
The key factor that promotes the Chinese new EV industry development is the full competition. And at present, the global NEVs market is developing rapidly. According to Sigma Intel's data, the global new energy vehicle shipment in 2023 was about 14.5 million units, of which the Chinese OEMs occupy 6 out of the top 10 OEMs, like the BYD, SAIC, Geely Mobile Automobile, and other Chinese companies, accounting for about 66% of the total shipment volume.
China is still Apple's major manufacturing site for its mobile phones, but there has been no mention of overcapacity in relation to iPhone production and sales.
In recent years, Apple have produced about 200 million units mobile phones annually in China. And according to Sigma Intel's data, of which about 48 million units were sold in the Chinese mainland market in 2023. Mm. And about 150 million units has been exported.
This narrative of so-called overcapacity is often seen as a strategic tactic to compete with their Chinese counterparts, but in a less dignified manner. Ho Jing, CGTN in Beijing.
The Hanover Messe, that is one of the world's largest industrial fairs, opened this year with a record number of Chinese exhibitors. Our correspondent Johannes Pleschberger has more from the northern German city of Hanover.
Robot arms that learn how to sort random parts on a conveyor belt. AI-based automation is the main focus at this year's Hanover Messe, which showcases the world's future industry tech. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz opened the German fair together with Norway's Prime Minister Jonas Gahr and EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. Scholz emphasized the need for less bureaucracy in Brussels, which, according to industry leaders, slows down the German economy. So what are the main innovations this year? The Hermes Award, a major industry prize, went to the new 2D grasping kit, a camera with AI software which cuts learning times for industry robots. Other products on show include AI assistants that allow industrial robots to be controlled by voice and systems that independently schedule their own maintenance. Roughly 4,000 exhibitors are showcasing this year, more than a quarter of them Chinese, which makes China the second most represented country after host Germany. China's investment promotion agency organized stands and events to foster bilateral investment cooperation between Beijing, Berlin, and beyond.
So we're trying to bring German companies and Chinese companies together to work in these fields, to cooperate in these fields. So it could be in joint ventures, it could be as fully owned foreign investments, everything is possible.
The future viability of Germany as an industry hub depends to some extent on the success of the Hanover Messe. A good turnout and many innovative products could give the world's third largest economy a significant boost. Johannes Pleschberger, CGTN, Hanover.
And with that, we're going to wrap up this edition of Global Business here on CGTN. I'm Michael Wong here in Beijing. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next time.